Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
And delighted to welcome Stephen O'Leary. He's the founder of Alitico, and Louisa Meehan, also founder of Woodview HRM. You're most welcome to the programme. I'm wishing you both a pleasant bank holiday weekend. Stephen, we might start with you. Probe into dezoning of land set for 500 homes. It seems to be a breaking story on the front page of today's Irish Independent.
It is, and it's kind of a... it's a microcosm of the issues that we face when it comes to housing in Ireland and the layers of complexity that exist and what would appear to be a very different voice coming from central government and local government. And that seems to be kind of at the cornerstone of this story. So it's Fionnán Sheehan, as you say, writing in the Irish Independent today. And at its centre, the key element would be this kind of flip-flopping on decisions. So decisions being made and then being overturned. And we know that developers need an element of certainty when it comes to investing in large-scale housing. And if permission is granted, they can build. But it's this uncertainty that exists and that comes through in this story that would appear to be at the absolute centre of all the problems.
Yeah. I'll be talking to some estate agents later on. But I know from my research on it that, you know, this infrastructure, planning, water, electricity is a huge blockage when it comes to creating, you know, and everybody's talking about a shortage of supply, but one of the inhibitors of such supply is infrastructure. What did you make of this story, Louisa?
Look, I think the story is calling for an independent review, and it's sort of implying that there is some underhandedness to what's going on. The zone, the area of land is around 5 acres near a national school in Goatstown, the Our Lady's Grove Primary School. It was zoned for development. It was zoned for housing. It has received planning twice for housing, once for 130 apartments, once for 700 student bed accommodation, both of which are needed in that area. Both of those were taken by local residents to the High Court and overturned at the High Court. So following the zoning being there, the planning permission being granted, we have two Fine Gael councillors who have gone in and pushed for it to be dezoned. And it is now gone from being residential to being 80% open space and 20% used sustainable neighbourhood infrastructure.
Which basically means you can't build on it.
Now, for land that, you know, a developer bought for 13 million, we can see why developers are getting concerned about that level of investment, because there is no amount of sustainable neighbourhood infrastructure that will give you a return on investment with that level of investment. So I can understand why the developer is agitated and calling for an investigation into this, because they bought the land when it was zoned for residential. It's in an area that needs residential properties being built, saying that it's to allow for the growth of the school, a primary school, open public spaces and community with 5 acres seems... what would be the nice word to use? But seems like a very
a bit of a stretch.
That's a nice way of putting it, Bobby.
All right. Well, look, we'll move on. Now, next Saturday, it's all about the local and European elections. I'm one of the people who's very happy about this, Stephen, because I get the day off. So next Saturday, when you're all talking about all the minutiae of the local elections, I'll be sunning myself somewhere. But the government will be praying for rain. Another high turnout could see its parties being washed out. So the better the conditions, the more people that come out to vote, the worse it is for the three parties in power.
Well, this is certainly the opinion of Senan Maloney in the Irish Independent today, and his analysis on the impact that the weather might have. And I think he's certainly harping back to the most recent referenda and the high turnout that was that came there, and the impact that had on, you know, I suppose, kind of the vote that came through. Now, we do know that how voting happens in referendums is very different to local and European elections. But, you know, we're less than a year out from a general election, and there'll be all eyes really on the performance, particularly of the government parties, and I think crucially independents. They are the two key groups that that all eyes are on. And the assumption here is that if the weather is okay and that leads to a high turnout, then Maloney's hypothesis is that this is going to be bad news for Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Greens.
Yeah, I think you're right to say that, Stephen, Louisa, a precursor for the general election. It does sort of set the lie of the land, you know, checks the temperature of the political landscape, etc. But I think Senan Maloney's evaluation of the status quo is actually quite on the money.
It is. It seems that we are, in his words, a grumpiness. We're demonstrating grumpiness on the doorsteps, which I think is probably very accurate in terms of the sentiment that we're getting out there. People are a little frustrated. And as you say, the core piece here is that we saw a 70-30 rejection in the recent referendum. The government were expecting that those family referendums would pass, and they did not. They had hoped, I believe, that the middle class would come out and in support of them. And so when they saw the middle class numbers coming out, he's saying that there was hope in the government that that would result in a positive result.
Sure.
That did not result in a positive result, as we're very, very aware. So I think the next round of elections next week will be really important in terms of looking forward.
Meanwhile, on the same day, we're going to elect a mayor of Limerick, which I'm pleased to see has a salary of 150 grand. I think it's a reasonably good salary for a Lord Mayor. But one of the candidates, John Moran, has got himself into a bit of a hot water because he went and published a picture of himself and indeed Bishop Brendan Leahy. And I believe the church aren't altogether happy with this photo scene.
They're not, and actually this struck a chord with me because I'm clearly not as important as Bishop Brendan Leahy. My son in fourth class came home to tell me that the same thing has happened to me in Wicklow, and I'm on some election campaign documentation without giving my permission. So I have sympathy with the bishop here in this situation, going, you know, are we supposed to get permission if our images are used to support?
Well, I think it was a paid advert, if
it was
a
paid advert, yeah.
So I'd suggest you are.
Well, so I think it's interesting. And I mean, look, there's certainly a sense this is somebody who is in a very high level of status within the local community. So his image being included in a newspaper advertisement does sort of say that he's backing it. And they even put a quote in which isn't from the bishop as such, but it's saying some blessings ahead over the next 4 weeks. So that does imply that it came from the bishop, and you know, not ideal. But the bishop has come out and said that he's not in support of any political candidate.
Stephen?
Yeah, it's interesting. We're talking about one candidate here. And there is a question that there's no such thing as bad publicity.
I agree
right?
with you.
You know, we see his photograph. We see his name. Now, there are other candidates kind of mentioned as like a bookend at the end of the article. But ultimately, you know, should he have asked for permission? It certainly would have been best practice. But did this
forgiveness is sometimes a better route. I think that might be the case here.
Yeah. And again, you know, the question I suppose really is, was this done with one eye on the potential consequences, and was the risk evaluated and said, well, sure, listen, if people talk about us a little bit more, is that all a bad thing? And ultimately, we are talking, as I say, about one candidate here and not the others.
Well, let's talk about something else, because I want to talk about Flutter and indeed their shift to the US listing on the New York Stock Exchange. Flutter CFO steps down as gambling group shifts listing to the US. Like, it really is an amazing company, and the size of the US gambling market is eye-watering, and they've already hoovered up a big piece of this. Like, this is a business that's just going through the roof.
It is. This one, when I was reading the story, I'm sort of feel like I've got two different hats on. You know, on one side, it's an amazing business. They're doing incredible. We see them moving to the New York Stock Exchange. We see their chief financial officer, Paul Edgecliffe Johnson, stepping down because of family commitments, which is a great thing for somebody in his position to come out and say. He's staying in the UK. He's being succeeded by Rob Cloudrake, I think it is.
Cauldrake,
thank you. Who, again, has spent a long time working in the organisation. So lots of really good news coming through. But with my other hat on, I'm going, this is an organisation whose primary source of income is coming from online gambling. And online gambling poses an enormous risk to the health and well-being of so many people throughout our country. So it's hard for me personally, you know, Louisa, as a human being, to support organisations when it is such, I suppose, a such controversial source of income. And they are. They're making enormous profits. So they're saying that they had nearly 3.4 million monthly players in the players in the US in the first quarter of this year, up 15% year on year. So we're seeing an enormous uptake in online gambling.
Well, I think you're probably seeing as well the legal sort of landscape in the US is opening up to allow online gambling, and they're, I suppose, best place to fill that opportunity.
Yep.
Because, and as I say, if it wasn't Flutter taking it up, somebody else would be doing it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and there's, I mean, it's good news for the company here. You know, it probably does shine a bit of a spotlight on the Dublin and European stock exchanges, because Flutter do point to the fact that the reason for the move was down to the fact that there's higher liquidity and greater trading volumes on the US markets. So it made sense for them in lots of ways to shift their listing. But that's clearly a challenge that stock exchanges, not just in Ireland, but across Europe face too, because this could potentially become a trend.
Yeah.
And we obviously want to keep our biggest and best companies with a listing in Ireland. It's important for the health of the Irish Stock Exchange. It's important for the health of European stock exchanges. But they're going to need to look at the reasons behind this and see how they can be addressed.
Absolutely. Also then, insurance and insurance levies, we've been paying them for as long as I can remember. But there's a new fund which will now pay out if insurance firms go bust about. And we saw some examples of this, that Maltese company that went bust, that left a lot of people high and dry. So ultimately, Louisa, I think this is a good thing, but you might walk us through what's happening here.
I mean, look, I would completely agree. I think this is absolutely a good thing. And the best part of it, if I'm reading it correctly, is that we are not going to have to pay for it. The government are planning to create a compensation fund that will pay out to policyholders if an insurance company is based in another EU country but operates here and becomes insolvent. But they're saying that the funds to support this needs to come from the country of origin. So we, as I suppose insurance payers within Ireland, will not be paying for it. We do have five levies. I didn't know this, to be honest. Five levies on our motor insurance policies.
Anybody remember them? And we're still paying for it.
It's so much. Yeah. It's a huge amount of money that we're paying in towards it. You know, the most important one that, you know, for me, and I think it's incredibly valuable to all of us, is the Motor Insurers Bureau of Ireland, MIBI. And in short, what they do is, if you are injured in a car accident by somebody who is not insured or who disappears, they, I suppose, become the other party and they pay out. So that if you're doing everything right from your perspective, then you are covered. And I'm personally happy to pay into that. I think it's really good to have that security within the country. But this is supporting people within the Irish motor insurance industry, and it will allow for more diversity within the market. So it's a good thing.
Stephen?
Yeah, I think it comes down, like, I mean, we work in, and we live in an increasingly globalised world, right? And we constantly talk about the fact that we want greater competition. And so we're seeing here insurers coming in from other jurisdictions and providing services to customers in Ireland. This just gives an extra amount of cover in those situations. So if you are purchasing a product from an insurer who's located or headquartered or based outside of Ireland, this gives you extra cover. It's also key, there's no extra levy here. So insurers aren't being asked to pay anything extra. Now, we've five already, so we don't want a sixth.
Yeah.
But there's ultimately, this is a good news story. It's extra protection, extra cover. And ultimately, it's not just for customers in Ireland. This is a European piece.
Also, we've seen figures. I think it was one in 10 or one in nine drivers out there is uninsured. That we've seen technology now introduced by the guards that's going to actually reduce that, which again is a good thing, because people who are uninsured just shouldn't be on the roads. Now, Stephen, I know you're going to love to talk about this next one, because the Irish Times editorial today tells us of a president and a criminal, all in the one sentence. Mr. Donald Trump and a spell in prison could prove perilous for the USA.
It could. Now, there are more unknowns here than there are knowns, to be honest. So we got obviously a verdict during the week. It's this historic moment, and essentially the next big step now is sentencing. So we'll find out in a matter of weeks essentially what the sentencing for President Trump will be. But the concern here is for the electorate and for those on both sides, is will this have any impact on actual voters? You know, we've heard of the phrase Teflon Trump in the past, right? And if you think back to 2016, when the first election against Hillary Clinton took place, and the absolutely shocking moments during that campaign, those moments where you went, he's never coming back from that. Like, they're never going to vote for him after that. And yet, ultimately, he became president. So, on the one hand, this is this historic seminal moment in US politics, in US society.
In US history.
Absolutely. But will it ultimately lead to the electorate changing their mind about the candidate here? And that's a real unknown. Polling data in the coming weeks and months will certainly help us understand that a little bit more. But again, you hark back to 2016, polling very close to they said that Clinton was going to be the president in 2016. And ultimately, we know that didn't come to pass. So it'll be interesting to see how the polls shift on the back of this. There are people saying that it's going to have a swing effect. But ultimately, what we're hearing from political commentators is that while Trump's approval rating and those maybe inclined to vote for him may go down, it's not going to lead to a corresponding bump for Biden. And so ultimately, while fewer voters may come out and cast a vote for Trump, is Biden going to get a corresponding increase?
Yeah. And it comes down to the fact that this is a two-horse race.
It is.
And you, that's your choice. You vote for this felon, as he now will be, or you vote for somebody who maybe you think is past his best sell-by date. There isn't a lot of choice here, Louise.
Well, there really is. There's very little choice. And I think that the challenge really in relation to this having a negative impact on Trump is, do we actually know anything that we didn't previously know? And I don't think we do. Yes, he was found guilty and so now he has a criminal conviction. But for stuff that we've known for a very long time that he did, and I don't think even Donald Trump was coming out necessarily and saying that he didn't do it. He was saying he was innocent, technically, legally, but not that he didn't do it. And so, you know, in the eyes of the population in America, are they going to change their mind? I don't necessarily think so. I think what it does highlight is that polarization within America. And I love going to the States on holidays, but I've become increasingly fearful of ever discussing anything political over there.
You never do.
You just, it's too scary.
I never open my mouth politically over there.
And that's not a good thing for any society.
Or could it be a nothing burger, as they call it, the States? a nothing burger, as in, you know, big deal here. Nothing to see here. Move on. Very, very interesting. And Stephen, there was a story around last week, I don't know if you saw it, about low bids on the Dublin office block masked the fact that there's capital out there looking for them. It refers to a scheme in the North Docks that's been offered for sale, and the results would make one sit up and wonder.
They would, and it's one of those classic, is this a good news or bad news? And it very much depends on whether you're a buyer or seller in the market right now. I mean, to really kind of cut to the chase here, if you're a seller, this is bad news. If you're a buyer, this is good news.
Maybe just explain the details of it, if you would.
Absolutely. So there was an office scheme in Dublin that was put on the market, and the price tag was 130 million. And reports last week in the Irish Times suggested that bids that had been received, approximately 10, varied between 60 and 95 million euros. So significantly under the price tag that was going to be on it. And they called out the fact that the owners are NAMA and an LA-based Oak Tree Capital, and that it had been previously put on the market in August last year for 155 million. So this is a serious step down in terms of valuations. So while it's bad news in terms of the valuation of this building, it would suggest that A, there is significant value in the market now if you're looking to buy, but also there's plenty of buyers. They received 10 bids, and if the average bid was
buyers at a price, Stephen.
Buyers at a price, but ultimately, you know, potentially 500 million plus in capital that's sitting there waiting to be invested in commercial property, because we are hearing that commercial property is coming under pressure. But this would suggest if there's half a billion lying around that people want to invest in the sector, you'll be able to sell commercial property. The key thing is at what price.
Yeah. Louisa?
Look, I mean, I agree with Stephen. I think it is about the price. I'm glad I'm not in the commercial property business right now. And I think it's probably, you know, if we look, commercial property is used for people who are working. And if we look forward, I think it's about looking at what are going to be the ways of work moving forward and trying to create environments that are attractive for people to work in. And then maybe that will increase the value of the property ultimately.
Now, Stephen, I know you're not from South County Dublin, but when you read about Ross O'Carroll Kelly's demise, it's going to be Paul Howard's last book. And when we look at all the books that he's done, the weekly column around the South Dublin lingo of the boys from Castle Rock College. Does it make you sad to hear that this will be the last book?
It does, and it's very bittersweet because I was talking before the show, actually, the first books came out when I was in secondary school, and the character at the time was pitched at my age. We were similar ages, and 3 or 4 years later, I ultimately went to college in Dublin, and I met a bunch of Ross O'Carroll Kellys. So it prepared me in lots of ways for what college life was going to be. And like countless others, I mean, they've sold 1.5 million books at this stage. I mean, it's an incredible success story. You know, 27 books across 24 years, each one a number one bestseller in Ireland. And I'm sure a bump for the last one that's set to come out now. Hugely enjoyable. The column each week in the papers, the books. He's been an incredible character and charted changes in Irish society from way back in 1998 yeah. right through. So, yeah, very
and
much
all
bittersweet.
Written by a guy who never played rugby, who never lived in Fox Rock or Dalkey, but had the innate acute observation skills to pick up what is a whole other world out there. I've interviewed him a number of times, Paul Howard, and I remember him telling me that he used to go on the dart from Pier Street out to Killiney, and all he'd be doing was just listening to the conversations, and that would be the basic content for the next week's article, or indeed into the book. It's fast. I think we'll miss it as a society because it really, really is very witty and very, very funny. Louisa, last word to you.
Yeah, look, I think looking at Howard, the piece that I sort of asterisked and that I took out of this is that when he wrote his first book and he tried to get it published, nobody would publish it. So the core message for me, if you can be this successful and at the beginning nobody wants your task, your knowledge, your skill, believe in yourself and go do it anyway, because he was self-published at the beginning. An amazing story.
Well, good luck to him. We haven't heard the last of Ross Carroll O'Kelly, and indeed the School of Castle Rock. Long may it live and long may it last. Thanks for a great review of the business stories, Louisa Meehan, and indeed Stephen O'Leary. Enjoy your bank holiday weekend.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.